Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is the podcast for you. Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, we're the fun podcast in real estate. Everybody else has really dull, dry, boring content, or maybe they're just all sales, sales, sales all the time. Yep. We tell stories over here. And so I know that you've got a really cool space that you're in, but we got to start off with the story. So Antoine, tell us where you're from, what you've been doing around real estate. Give us a little bit of background on you.
Yeah, so I'm 25 years old, live in Los Angeles, been investing in real estate for 5 years now. So started when I was 19, 20 years old. My brother took me and my dad to a real estate investing seminar. We learned about flipping houses, wholesaling, apartment buildings. And then from there, I got addicted and I couldn't stop learning about real estate and trying all the different ways out to invest. I literally tried everything for 2 years straight until I realized that out-of-state investing was the way to go, just with the amount of money.
Since you're in California?
Huh. Yeah, I know. Things are a little bit expensive over here, you know? My dad only had $40,000 to invest. We tried to invest in California, just never ended up working. So we had to go out of state. We were forced to with our budget. And I bought my first house my last semester at university for $35,000 in Memphis, Tennessee, renovated it for $5,000, then rented it out, and then did a cash out refinance.
And so do you still have that house, Antoine? Do you have a personal emotional attachment to the first investment?
I still have the house. Personal attachment? No, not at all.
Oh, it became a number to you. Oh.
You have to treat it all like numbers. Because now, so since that time, now we've built that up and we started building our own portfolio. Then we started helping other friends and family build portfolios through a turnkey business that we started, Martell Turnkey. And so now we're doing 10, 15 homes a month. And so, yeah, now it's like a house, you know, a home or house doesn't mean anything to me. It's all just a number or an address.
So wait, since you're in LA, do you even have a primary residence or do you only buy rental real estate?
Only buy rental real estate. I rent here in LA.
Are you serious? You rent in LA. And your city's expensive. You should move to North Carolina because you could have a primary residence. We have a lot of Californians that come out here.
Yeah.
All right, so the craziest thing you've seen in buying real estate. And obviously, a lot of people start off in those little seminars, the whole Carlton Sheets late night infomercial thing, which actually works if you apply to it smartly and accurately assess your risk and reward ratio. But I'd love to know what you've seen in your 5 years.
Yeah. So the craziest thing that we've had, you know, we've done probably 250 homes at this point. So there's been a lot of like weird stories or things, but there is one particularly crazy or bad one that happened, which was we ended up buying this, I think it was a duplex in Cleveland, Ohio. We do Memphis, Tennessee and Cleveland, Ohio. Bought a duplex in Cleveland, Ohio. The property came with like two new HVAC, two new hot water tanks, two new furnaces, right? So two new condensers, two new hot water tanks, and then two new furnaces. So I think altogether it was worth like $12,000 for all of those major systems. And so the day we bought it, and the property was supposed to come with all these things, right? So we don't put it in our renovation bid or anything like that. The day we close on it, our contractor goes to begin the work the next day, the day after closing, and all of it is gone. Everything has been completely ripped out.
What year was this?
This was last year, 2019.
Oh, so not even in the worst of the recession, but like recently.
No. This was, yeah. And then I just get a phone call and it's like my parents are in the car with me as my project manager calls me. He's like, "You'll never believe what happened." Da, da, da. Like we close on the property the day after closing. Literally, they go begin the work. Nothing's in there. And I was like, oh my God.
Sons of motherless goats, man.
I know.
Was the seller involved in this? Did he set it up?
So it gets better. So then I call insurance and I'm like, "Hey, we closed on the property that right after closing, somebody stole all this stuff." And they're like, "Right after closing? What time was closing?" And it's like, dude, I'm out of state. Like the closing is the whole day for me. Like I send my paperwork the day before. Like I don't know what day closing is. And what is the closing? When it's funded or when the docs are given to the count? Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't know what the actual closing date is. So I just said like in the morning, you know, and they wanted like a police report. They wanted all this documentation and all this kind of stuff. And then pretty much they were like, "Well, you can't prove like that it was done before or after, therefore." And I'm like, oh man, okay, whatever. We just eventually gave up on it because they were asking for so much information. My realtor didn't want to like put his name on the chopping block. and like signed documentation that said closing was this time. And
wait, your realtor wouldn't confirm when closing was?
No, it wasn't the realtor. It was because my realtor goes and checks the homes before we actually buy them.
Okay.
But he went like the day before or night before and stuff was there. And I don't know. It was a weird situation that was going on with all the timing kind of stuff. So he didn't end up getting...
That makes sense because that is a normal time frame to check a house inside 24 hours.
Yeah, exactly. And then so that ended up happening. And then we're like, all right, screw it, whatever. Let's just go ahead and re-put in everything. We go ahead, re-put in everything. So we started the renovation, put that brand new thing, all the new stuff back in. So that took about a week or two while they were renovating the house. Then 2 weeks later, I get another phone call. You'll never believe what the hell happened again. Mustn't be the same guys. They came back to the property over the weekend when the contractors weren't there and took everything again. So they must have had like a easy way to access or get inside of the property. And so then we were like, all right, we're not even putting stuff in until like the whole renovation is done. So it was twice that these guys came, whoever, I don't know who the hell it was. These guys came, took it twice. So it's like $24,000-$25,000 in extras on an $80,000 property.
Of course. What did the police say? Do they like watch the neighborhood and see if somebody's out there trying to sell some furnaces on the black market?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know if we ended up filing a police report. A lot of that stuff, just you file the police report and nothing ever happens anyways, because what are they going to do? So I think we installed security cameras, and then we just kind of waited until we had a confirmed tenant. And we told the tenants like, hey, as soon as you move in, we'll install this the day before kind of thing, you know? So that's the best we can do. So one of our new processes now is we don't install any of those major systems until we have like a tenant move-in date. And we'll just do it a day or two before so that we don't have that same issue happen over and over again.
So do your prospective tenants not care that there's 90 degrees, no air conditioning? They're like, it's cool, just get it done before we show up.
Yeah, most of them are actually. Yeah, it was pretty surprising too. I didn't think that they would be okay with it, or they would want to see some sort of proof or something like that. But yeah, the property management company was just told them straight up, and most of them just agreed to it that they would be okay with moving in. And as long as it was done before move in, then they were fine with it.
You had the key right there. And in fact, it's the key to successful real estate, no matter what state you're in and whether you're doing rentals or regular houses or businesses. You said what the property manager does is they tell them. And so if you tell people things, you can have a lot of things go wrong and people will stick by your side. It's when you try to be all sneaky and sideways about it that you don't. I'm curious though, with your rental properties, did you go meet the neighbors, or has your realtor or property manager gone out to meet the neighbors around that duplex to kind of, you know, let them know they're keeping an eye on things?
I'm not sure if that ever did end up happening. I think we just took it into our own hands of just like, we installed security cameras on that property for sure. Just so they wouldn't come.
With your investment.
Yeah. Cause it only costs a couple $100 and then you don't have to worry about it. I mean, people are not going to come in with the security cameras come and do it. So, well, you'd think they wouldn't. And they already made $25,000. So
how did you land on Cleveland and Memphis as your favorite cities?
Yeah. So when I was in college, I took that seminar, learned about it. And then I started listening to a lot of podcasts, meeting a lot of people who were investing out of state from California. Then I would ask them, how the hell did you find, you know, X, Y, and Z market, right? And then I just took a big list of all those things that they were looking for. And then what I did, I pretty much took all the top 250 markets or MSAs in the US, and then took all the information that they looked for and put it on a spreadsheet. So population growth, job growth, major employers, diversity of workforce, the population number, actually. So like, I don't want like too large of a population and too small of a population. And then most importantly, the median home price and median rent price to see if the market was like a cash flowing market kind of thing. So with all of that data, and then also doing more research about like the economic development committees in these markets too. So like, what are they doing to bring new companies in? What are they giving? Are they giving tax incentives? And then whoever had the strongest, like Memphis and Cleveland both have very strong economic development committees where they give like tax incentives. That's why Amazon built so many warehouses in both of those markets, because they were giving so many tax incentives for Amazon to just keep building and build. Yeah, use our market, use our airports, and just like giving them tax-free for like 30 years for them to come and do these kinds of things. So that's what I look for.
So you're a seriously big nerd then.
Yep.
So is that why you started to do more real estate investing? Because you had already done all the back work and all of the research, and so it became a little bit faster? You shortened your own learning curve?
Yeah, 100%. You have to put in the work up front. And because then I knew, like, with the 100% certainty that this market was going to be a market that was going to expand, I don't know when, but 3, 5, 10, 20 years, right? And then I just need to choose the right pockets within that neighborhood, which you can do more and more data mining and stuff about that. So yeah, I already knew with full clarity that this market was going to be a market that was going to increase in value over time. And then also just looking at, like, the past data for those markets too, like, it wasn't a market that had had a pop yet or a spike yet. And that was also really important to me. So you go and look at, like, an Austin, Texas, or a Nashville, or like a Florida market where, like, you see the population growth, the job growth is, like, you know, peaking, or not peaking, but has been going up for 2 or 3 years. Like, for me, that's too late. And a lot of people still like to jump into those markets, Texas, Florida. For me, I want to get in when it's just stable, but I can see a reason for there to be a spike due to economic development committee or very affordable home prices or affordable rents, et cetera, et cetera.
So just out of curiosity, why do you stay in Los Angeles when your data shows you that the opportunities are elsewhere? Inertia?
Well, first of all, I love California and I love Los Angeles. My family's here now too. So they just moved from San Francisco down to LA. So we're all here.
Yes, that's baby steps, right?
Yeah. So we're all here. And so that's one of the reasons why, the reason why I don't move out there is, first of all, now I'm in two markets, right? So Memphis and Cleveland. Then it's kind of like, okay, which market? And then also, I don't want to be too heavily, I'm trying to leave the emotion out of it. So I'm trying to leave it to data. So now if I move to Memphis and then I fall in love with it, or fall in love, or, you know, meet new people, or it's hard for me to, like, then leave that market. Because, for example, in a couple mark neighborhoods in Cleveland, Ohio, we used to sell homes for like 70 grand. We're selling them for 95 grand now, 3 years, 2 years later.
Pretty good.
Okay, what's going to happen in 2 more years in those neighborhoods? Like, we're only in 4 or 5 zip codes. What's going to happen in those 2 or 3 zip codes that we have increased the values? It might be overpriced. Now I may need to go to Dayton, Ohio. Now I may need to, you know, change my market and change my data because the prices, the median home prices, have gone up so much. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things too. I just don't want to be all tied into one market. I want to just leverage the data and what I know about how to find the new market so that I can easily change at the drop of a hat to a new market when the opportunity comes.
So you've already parsed all this data, and, you know, most people either don't have the time or the inclination to do that. Do you sell the data? Do you help other people determine where they want to invest now that you've gotten all that put together?
Great question. So we actually are building a website right now, because I just took all my data and made it pretty and legible for the normal person to read it. Because, man, it is so difficult to, like, I'll go on a podcast like, oh, how do you choose the market? The same question you asked. And I'm like, and then they're like, what websites is it? Well, Bureau of Labor Statistics, Census Bureau, Forbes.
I love the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's like ridiculous, but yeah. You have to know how to maneuver it though. It's kind of a
thing. Exactly. That's the thing. You download these spreadsheets with 3,000 rows and you're like, okay, now what do I, you know, like, if you're not an Excel master, you're just going to be completely confused about what the hell do you do with the data now? So we're actually making a really pretty website. The website URL, it's a very MVP-ish right now. It's called investor-list.com. So it'll list out all the top 500 MSAs in the US, show the population, the job growth, the median home price, median rents, rent-to-value ratios. And then we're just going to slowly add more and more stuff to help answer that question of, like, how do I choose a market out of state? Well, just go to this website. You can do filters and different things like that to find the market that, you know, suits what you're looking for.
Man, I can dig that. Are you going to sell subscriptions to that site, or how's that going to work?
It's free right now. And then I'm probably just going to have, like, advertisers come on. So, like, for example, like, if somebody clicks on Memphis, Tennessee, oh, we're interested in Memphis. And then, you know, my turnkey company would pop up like, oh, if you want to invest in this market, here's a great turnkey provider. And so kind of just have, like, for example, agents in North Carolina, somebody clicks on a market in North Carolina, and then, you know, the top eight, hey, if you're looking for investment properties, here's, you know, Lee, you can reach out to her, et cetera.
So what are you doing that you just said there? You do turnkey for other people?
Yeah. So so our turnkey company, we actually go buy the homes, renovate them, rent them out, and then resell them. And we're doing 10 to 15 of those a month. We don't sell other people's properties. They're all all our homes that we sell.
Gotcha. So is there anything you want to share with the audience before I let you go for the day? It's anything they should know? What do you sell and promote? And got a book, got a website? What should check out about you?
I have a lot of stuff
right now because you've done all of this at the age of 25. So I know they want to get on board the Antoine train and see what happens.
That's good. Yeah, I do have a book. It's on Amazon. You can just search my name. It's A Millennial's Guide to Investing in Cash Flowing Rental Properties. I have a podcast as well. You can, again, just search my name because it's too long of a title. And then the best place to reach out to me and learn more is probably just my Instagram. My Instagram's at Martel Antoine. I post new content every day. I go live. I DM back. Feel free to reach out to me there. And there's a bunch of links to all the other things that I'm working on.
As I look you up now on Instagram, oh, you've got a blue check mark. Good job. Mm-hmm. You're fancy.
Thank you.
Let's see. stuff. I don't see anything about you and your family and your kids and dogs and you out.
No.
You don't do anything fun on your Instagram? Come on,
nope.
Man.
It's all business on there.
All business, all the time. Founder of Martel Turnkey. There's his link tree. All right, friends. So go check out Antoine's stuff. I know you want to hear more about the story. And if you're like me, you're totally ready to dig into investor-list whenever that's ready. Antoine, thanks for coming on the show and sharing information with the crazy shit followers. And look forward to seeing what happens with you next.
Thank you so much for having me.
And don't worry, guys. All of his links and stuff are in the show notes because I know y'all didn't write anything down. You don't even remember his name. It's okay. Just click subscribe to the show, give us 5 stars, and we'll see you next time.
If you are listening to this episode and you need to tell us something about your crazy life in or around real estate, then tweet me at Lee Brown or reach me on any of the social networks. That's if you're a broker, realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular normal human being who happens to have dealt in real estate. Subscribe for more episodes. And as always, we are thrilled that you joined us for some crazy shit in real estate. See you next time.